something some time ago. It is taken from a speech that Solzhenitsyn did in 1978 at Harvard. There's, of course, always a much broader context, but I'm going to try to share this with you quickly. He spoke to a group of graduates and professors, and he talked about world calamity, conflict, catastrophe. He alluded to a doomsday that would come upon the earth. He talked about all these kinds of things. And of course, everybody was thinking another world war or some such thing. And he said, no, I'm not talking about a world war. I'm not even talking about the Cold War. He said, there is a disaster, however, which has already been underway for quite some time. He said, of course, I forgot here. He said, I am referring to the calamity of a despiritualized, irreligious, humanistic consciousness. This is what we deal with. This is what we, that with which we contend. He said, two such consciousness, man or people, are the touchstone in judging and evaluating everything on earth. We're talking about healthcare, provision, quality, delivery, equity, and so forth. Of course, this translates to everything, but we're focusing on health here. He said, imperfect man, human beings, who are never free of pride, self-interest, envy, vanity, and dozens of other defects are making the decisions, making the judgments. We are now experiencing, he said, the consequences of mistakes which had not been noticed at the beginning of the journey. You know, we talked about hegemony yesterday and put that in context. It just happens. We hadn't noticed this. He said, on the way from the Renaissance to our days, we have enriched our experience, but we have lost the concept of a supreme complete entity, God for us, which used to restrain our passions and our irresponsibility. This is the real crisis. I was touched by that and will be. We're looking at the role of the church for shaping society, actually, and we have said that faith increases life expectancy. We all agree on that. And how? What are the factors involved? Values, virtues, quality of life, community, and quality of life. Admonition and quality of life, hope and quality of life, happy, health profiles is what we're talking about. Our church can provide that. How can we transfer these to other communities? What do we have to give? We have prophetic information. Before the world knew that smoking was bad, was harmful, we had it. We know what's coming upon the earth. We can share these by report, but also by model. Research, by report and model. Information, we said, remember, is not sufficient to bring about change. We have to do something. And I take us to Matthew 5 for that. We are the salt of the earth. We have to model, demonstrate purity for health, preservation, joy, excitement of life. And I'll come back to that. What is required for universal change? Participation, consumer involvement, community empowerment, global change. And I think this came from Kitty, from Dr. Etienne. The church, the Adventist church's model is from member to top leadership, as Kitty was describing it. But we're all in here together. We have a system, and we have a system that can reach the world. For universal change, she said, connectedness for prevention and change via values for human rights, sense of belonging, and so forth. We're talking about that big thing called community and the power of community being the most powerful entity. Then for prevention and change via service. And remember the connection with mentoring. There needed to be service. And I remember the woman sitting here who left too soon. She was trying to get another session, and I believe. But she said, the students, the children, the young people want me to come to their Sabbath school class, and I do that. But I don't know how I can do this mentoring thing and the service. I'm a busy person. And Kitty said, what about about Blue Jean Sabbath? Now, doesn't that make sense for a busy person? I don't think she works on the Sabbath. She could be a medical professional, but she sounded like she was attending Sabbath school with these young people. Why not incorporate something into the Sabbath school experience or youth church experience and let it happen then? Go out and do something. We are so caught up in our traditions of dressing up on Sabbath and going and sitting and entertaining and feeding each other that we forget there's something else. We are supposed to be doing something else. And that's just one example. I wish she had just heard that one little thing. Maybe that would have gotten her going. I can remember when we were mentoring the youth groups at our church, we always had food. We always had them at our house because it was easy for us to do that. But we found ways to do other things with them. And we didn't go out and clean lawns and do those kinds of things every week, but we did some things with them on a regular basis, and it fit together. Passion, skills, time, and self, the model, mentor, member, all of that really is the essence of mentoring. If you go back and study mentoring, this is all required. This is what it is about. And these are the skills that are being taught in Kurt's program. Connectedness for provision and change via global organization. I think Kitty covered that very well, that we have a system like no other on this earth. I believe our system is probably better than the Catholic Church system, which has been around a lot longer. But we have something a little different that I'm beginning to figure out. I don't know what it is yet. Priority of mission. It is all about mission. No matter what we talk about, what we advocate, the social justice, human rights, and so forth, it's all about mission. God has called this church to a mission. But somehow, we, along the way, have put blinders on, and we have, I think, misperceived and misunderstood and miscommunicated the mission in its essence. Connectedness, we talked about community, I won't go over that again. But it would make so much sense if our churches were open 7 days a week instead of 1 or 2 days a week. Our churches should be public health facilities. They should be counseling centers. They should be food distribution centers. They should be community-based educational centers for continuing education and so forth. I believe we would be blessed more if we did more. The diversity. You know that our church started off mainly North American, Caucasian. Now that has changed completely. The church is majority persons of color, and instead of men being the majority, are now women the majority. We have the diversity, though. It's not all one or the other, but we have such a tremendous mix. And if we love each other and conduct our lives as though we love each other, that in itself would be a major witness to the rest of the world. If we just demonstrate how people of different backgrounds and ethnicities and race and class can live together and live out the love of Jesus, that in itself would be a major witness. Practical steps. I think these come from Kurt's findings. Adopt a perspective of improving the community. It begins with thinking. We learn that in Romans. We learn that in other places in the Bible. We have to change our way of thinking. I have never been a Michael Jackson fan. He died recently, and of course, you know, Michael Jackson is everywhere on the TV and in all the publications still. But there was one song, and I don't know it all, but he said, if you want to make a change, look at the man, look at the woman in the mirror. And start there. Conduct community assessment of needs and so forth. Young people can get involved in this. I wanted to ask Kurt, somebody, do you have an example of an assessment, a simple assessment that people could take home from here and use right in their own neighborhoods, right in their own churches? Young people could enjoy being involved in that kind of thing. But maybe if you don't have it already, somebody might commit to putting one up in 8 weeks or so. I think everybody would want something like that. That's what I'm saying. And partnering with others, we've talked about that, and we may come around to that again. But get to know the local and state legislators. I think I just applauded Duane this afternoon on the panel when he talked about how important it was or is for us to get involved in politics. And then Kurt came back with that this afternoon. Again, we have been fooled by Satan to stay out of politics. Who else should be running the world? Just think about it. Who else would God want to have running the world? I have to get off of that. Social capital, that is so very important. We won't have time to do the lessons that we would like to teach on it and get into it and enjoy it. But the understanding, the value, the strength, the power of social capital is so very important. And going to remember, Kurt reminded us, bonding capital, bridging capital, and linking capital are important. If nothing else, teach your young people these valuable lessons. They're going to need this as they move out from under your wings and into real life to try to make their way. Mentoring is all about relationships. We covered all of that. I think we have covered that sufficiently, but we wanted to come back. Provide for your young people in your church a non-threatening learning community. So, as I remember, and even as our children were growing up, we were just so judgmental. Everything was like to catch them doing wrong. Not intentionally, but that's the way it came out, and that's the way it came across. Let's step back. Even when they're doing wrong, yeah, you see them doing that wrong thing and you want to guide them away from dangerous and risky behaviors and all of that. But see in them the potential that God planted in them. See love in them and see their need to have you affirm them. It may be difficult, but that is so important. They have to have self-confidence if they're going to do what the Lord wants them to do in these end times. Our young people are going to have to carry this thing through. And it is our job to prepare them. And if we don't, I think we will miss it. We need to develop expertise and knowledge. We need to see that they get that. We need to challenge them to do great and marvelous things. Ellen White says, higher than the highest human thought can reach is God's ideal for his children. And we should never say, well, you shouldn't aim that high. We don't want you to get disappointed. Some of us know that's slave mentality. You know that. Support and reassurance. Even when they mess up, tell them that failing, messing up, is part of growth and development. What lessons have you learned from messing up? Networking and partnership. Not in the ways that some of the major Ivy League schools and the great universities of the world talk about networking in order to position oneself and to get most out of the world for oneself, but networking, partnering to help people. And that's what going out on service missions, I like to call them, service missions and service learning and outreach programs and projects, teach them. Coaching, yes, you're a coach. Listening and reassuring them sometimes is what this lady was talking about, I believe. They have so many needs, she says. But while we're going out on this service endeavor, we can talk about some of these things. I pulled this. I guess we have time. I call these mentoring compasses. A moral compass will cause you to look above. An intuitive compass causes you to look inside. Historical compass causes you to look behind. Kitty started there. Directional compass causes you to look ahead. Strategic compass causes you to look around. Cautionary compass causes you to look beneath. Am I on solid ground when I do this? A firm foundation. Visionary compass causes you to look beyond. Somebody was trying to get that quickly. You may not get all of it, but it'll be in there. Just something to help you remember. Gary left us with a checklist for mentoring. And I think you got all of these. They'll be in there, but his simple plan. But my point is, he was talking about the one-to-one, although I think mentoring is not a one-to-one, should never be a one-to-one relationship, but at least a three-to-one. That's you, the other person, and God has to be in there. But all of these kinds of things that he talked about in principle and in simple practice work for organizations. Why not invite the people from the Baptist and Lutheran church over for a little meal to try to build a relationship, just to talk, to get to know each other? And then the next time, do it again and start talking about what we can do together to make our neighborhood better or to save our children. We all want to save our children. We can't say we don't want to partner with you because you're saving them for the Baptist church. Let the Holy Spirit and the Lord work that out. We just need to save them from the degradation and from the harm that Satan would put on them. Bring them over and then develop more formal relationship with them, and you have a community plan for getting something done. Education and training for capacity, skill, and empowerment. And we look at this thing from a moral and ethical issues perspective. These are imperatives. We want to improve conditions of daily life for people to take control of their own lives and to help others, to address and change structural drivers in the community, in the church, everywhere. Improve quality and skills for participation in decision making, choices, and evaluation. We've got to give our young people and older people practice making decisions for a wider body. They need to know how to negotiate on a board to get an idea move forward. They need to learn these skills, and practice is what's going to help them. Passing on good values, one of the most important contributions a mentor, a trainer, a teacher, a coach, anyone can make. It's what disciples do. The great tragedy. Remember this, and I have paraphrased it and touched it up a little bit. Social injustice is killing people on a grand scale, said Eugenio Villar the other day. He said, and is the result of a toxic combination, and I'm kind of working with this, of bad policies, economic despair, and disruptive politics. The paradox of our time. Paradox of our times is that we have taller buildings but shorter tempers, wider freeways but narrower viewpoints. We spend more but have less. We buy more but enjoy less. We have bigger houses and smaller families, more conveniences but less time. Let's see if I can get this to move. Come on, every moment is precious. We have more degrees but less sense, more knowledge but less judgment, more experts, yet more problems, more medicine, but less wellness, which is why we're here. We, or some people, drink too much, smoke too much, spend too recklessly, laugh too little, drive too fast, get too angry, stay up too late, get up too tired, read too little, watch too much TV, and pray too seldom. We have multiplied our possessions, but reduced our values. We talk too much, love too seldom, and hate too often. We've learned how to make a living, but not a life. We've added years to life, but not life to our years. We've been all the way to the moon and back, but have trouble crossing the street to meet a new neighbor, or a neighbor from a different background. We've done larger things, but not better things. We've cleaned up the air, but polluted the soul. We've conquered the atom, but not our prejudice. We write more, but learn less. We plan more, but accomplish less. We've learned to rush, but not to wait. We build more computers to hold more information, to produce more copies than ever, but we communicate less and less with each other and with our God. What is our purpose? Do you remember the story in Mark 11? It's that fig tree with all the wonderful leaves. I was just sending out messages. Come eat here. Come eat here. And when Jesus went, there were no figs. And I can't get into all of it right now, but the bottom line, what did Jesus do? What did he say? since there were no figs, when the tree looked like it should have had figs. You know, our beautiful churches I'm talking about, and how we look when we go in there, and as somebody said earlier today, go in there and sing together and then leave the community. How we look, that beautiful fig tree, but do we feed the community? Jesus said, you are cursed. You will never bear figs again. You will wither and die. And what is the lesson in Genesis 19? Do you remember that one? Bible says, and Lot's wife looked back. God was calling her upward and forward. He wanted her to do more, to be an example, to be a model. She was even, well, anyway, what did he say to her? Frozen right here because you refuse to go where I'm telling you to go. Our purpose. Knowledge becomes relevant only when it is translated into wise action. Someone said that information has doubled in so many years, yet knowledge, understanding that information, has halved. And wisdom, knowing how to use that information appropriately for the good, has quartered. Knowledge must become wise action. Theory must become correct practice. And theology, Seventh-day Adventists, must become life. What is our policy direction? We want to move toward removing barriers to universal, equitable health care to reach the unreached and underserved. We need to begin to develop policies at all levels. Kitty talked about starting where you sit on the pew. If we begin in our own church, our own neighborhood, and then require this of our church all the way up, we can do it. Require people-centered, high-quality, first-level care as a human right for all people. Provide better public policies by involving faith-based organizations of all kinds. Government, we talked about, private sector, and the people. Everybody has to be involved. Move to more inclusive leadership from command and control, somebody said the other day, to steer and negotiate. Another way of saying facilitative leadership. Ecclesiastes 4. Kitty, this is yours that you didn't get to put in there. Two is better than one because they have a good, more satisfying reward for their labor. For if they fall, the one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him who is alone when he falls and has not another to lift him up. Remember some time ago, you know the famous, it was called a poem, but it is a major statement for me. They came for this group, and I was not one of them, so I didn't speak up. I didn't do anything. Then they came for that other group. And I was not one of them, so I didn't get involved in that. I didn't say a word. Then they came for that group. Didn't bother me because I was not one of them. I said nothing. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak up, to stand up, to help me. Woe to the one who is alone. And if we continue to isolate ourselves as a church, we are going to be very much alone. Again, if two lie down together, then they have warmth. But how can one be warm alone? And though a man might prevail against him who is alone, two will withstand him. A threefold cord is not easily broken. I talked about the threefold partnership for mentoring. For you and the Baptist, it's the same God. For you and the church, the Islamic mosque, which is within walking distance from our house, I believe we serve the same God. We need to get together. Our faith commitments, remember Gene Duff talked about this, our commitment must be inextricably linked to our faith. Faith should bring us together to build bridges that close the gaps and lead to action. There are urgent moral imperatives before us. Our purpose then, according to going back to Matthew 5, and this is the Message version, which I love. Let me tell you why you are here. You're here to be salt seasoning that brings out the God flavors of this earth. If you lose your saltiness, how will people taste godliness? You've lost your usefulness and will end up in the garbage. Like those two examples. If we are not living as the salt of the earth, why does God need us? Oh, he doesn't. He loves us. before the bell, unless you turned it off. Oh, I forgot I shouldn't sit down. It is, 5:40, and I'm supposed to lead the discussion and question-answer period. Do you have any questions and answers? Do you have any requests of any kind? Do you want clarification on anything? And we're only going to have about 10 minutes because we're supposed to go back over to the large assembly early. They've requested us to come early. Do you have comments? You want to share with? Yes. I think it will. My summations will be on the website. And please remind me if I do that for two pieces to give citation. One is unknown anyway, but I need to say that. Yes. Yes. We have to change the whole paradigm. Those of us who are over 40, I'll just put it there, but most of us are way, way beyond that. But we just need to move out of the way. Someone said recently, get the fossils dug out of position and let some new life come. Now, we're not supposed to abandon the churches, abandon the young people. We're supposed to be there, but behind them. You know, somebody said we can get a lot done. We can accomplish what the Lord has called us to accomplish if we will get over our hang-ups over who gets the credit. If we can put a young person up front and coach and mentor that young person, you know, that should be the best feeling. I think we do not believe Titus 2. You know, it is incredible right there where we have in 2:13, you know, our blessed hope. We like to talk about that. Our blessed hope, the soon coming of Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. But before that, he says the old men need to teach the young men. The old women need to teach the young women. And we just skip all over that part and go right to waiting for Jesus, you know, just being translated right there in the way. We have to somehow, well, I'm going to say it the way I really feel it, and I'll give the disclaimer to everybody else. It's they try to protect me. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Yes. I'm going to make one statement and then I'm going to turn it over to people who give a real answer. But for me, this is real. I'm with this gentleman. We need to make a change to keep the young people in the church. They are leaving more than 50% in every place around the world. And we've seen it. We are losing the church indirectly. Why don't you take all of this back and go back and convince your leaders, I've been to your place, convince your leaders to elect all young people, 35 and under, for every church office, to do everything we've talked about here, and give them the training, the expertise, and everything they need to do it. Forget the rest of them. If they want to go somewhere other than heaven and the new earth, that's their decision. But we want the young people to go. Looking, yes, yes. I'm telling you, elect the young people to the church office if you're serious about it. Bring them into the conference and mission and union and division offices. Do that. Now, for those who'd like to give different answers, Kurt. If there's one thing we know about adolescents is that they don't want simulations and make-believe projects. They want real life stuff. They want to make a difference in the world. She's the youth, the youth of the church. Right. However,
as you're voting them in, meantime,
yes.
Bring them in.
Bring them in.
Bring them in.
Yes.
And the other thing, not, you know, because you're saying how the better you can do it.
Yes. Yeah, you just have to do
yourself,
it.
Yourself and one other person inside of, you create something out of
you. Right, right. Is there anybody in here who's old enough to remember in the United States it was like the Saturday night social in the church? In other countries it was something similar. And you know, Adventists don't believe in dancing, but remember
the marching?
Yes. And then we called it dramatic movement at one point. But the marching looked a whole lot like the moves that we saw during the week, but the old people didn't know what they were. So we were marching, you know. But
not the white church.
No, we know you. We forgot, and probably not on beat. But however, but whatever it is, I think Kitty is saying, whatever it is they do, let's find a way to help them to do it, to enjoy the church, and that's part of it. Enjoying the church building, seeing the building as a place of happiness and joy, will help them come on Sabbath morning. Yes. They're just disillusioned. You don't, the others are dead. Yes. Right. Right. But that's a great way to reclaim those who have left. Can you imagine having a meeting, a series of meetings in your church where you never claim a text or scripture? You just focus on being green. Now, of course, the values, the biblical messages are there, but you don't preach to them, is my point. You just, we're going to be green here. Come in here and show us how to do it. Yes, yeah,
well,
yeah.
Football.
You could start there, but we probably start with how beautiful. What is it? It's not so easy being green. Kermit the Frog, 1972. But better than the Lord's going to bomb you off the earth. Jonathan Duffy is here, and I want to make sure that I have this right, because Jonathan is my source for every good and perfect thing for mentoring. And he has wonderful materials that you can get just by contacting him or these people. And I tried to do it legally correctly, but I've been giving everybody his name. Please tell them who you are, what you do now, Mr. Adra Leader from... South Pacific Division.